This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
From the Fox News Podcast Network, I'm Dana Perino, and everything will be okay. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Everything Will Be Okay. This week, I'm very excited. I'm joined by my dear friend and the co-founder of the Nielsen Swader Integrated Marketing Communications team, who also happens to be a phenomenal mother and a beauty guru. Maura Nielsen and I started our relationship through mentoring, really, and at a networking event. And she wanted to get to know me. I was completely charmed by her. And she had read And the Good News Is, and we have been really good friends ever since. Maura is often sought after for mentorship. She has incredible expertise. She's very generous with her time. And one of the things that she has taught me is that you can continually evolve and also stay true to yourself. And I think she's absolutely amazing. So here's Maura. Okay, Maura, you're one of my favorite people. So this will be like a catch up with an old friend. Tell everybody a little bit about who you are, where you grew up, and where you're living now.
Yeah. So I grew up in the Midwest most of my life. I, like you, totally Midwesterner, and then found herself transplanted here to the East Coast. University of Kansas, Jayhawk graduate, as a journalism major. And, you know, my ambition in life was to move to New York. That's really all I ever wanted.
Really?
To
I
do.
Didn't know that.
Yes. Yes. Mm. That was when I was 11 years old, I remember we were traveling to Manhattan, and my parents described it as I pouted and made such a fuss because I was so upset that we were tourists and that I was not a local. And so, and I practically ruined that trip for everyone, as any 11-year-old girl yep. ultimately does.
Yeah.
And so I found myself in, as a graduate of the journalism school in communications, and really built, a career within PR, first on the agency side at major, sort of global public relations agencies, and then ended up kind of doing what we call going from agency life to in-house at L'Oréal Paris, where I was for well over a decade in various roles within marketing communications, ultimately leading the integrated marketing communications division for L'Oréal Paris North America.
How did you get involved in the beauty industry? Were you at a PR agency where you had a client that led you to that?
Yeah. I was at Manny & Selvage & Lee working on a lot of the P&G business, and then transferred to a smaller boutique sort of agency where we oversaw all of the J&J portfolio of beauty clients like Neutrogena, Aveeno, Rock, Purpose, Ambi. So that was really my foray into beauty. And it was that agency that really helped to ultimately, sort of slingshot me into, the number one, biggest, largest, beauty company in the world. Yeah. And beauty is such a dynamic industry on so many levels. It's nuanced. It is full of such incredibly passionate, devoted people. And it's so democratized. Unlike, I would say fashion that is sort of, fraught with, just intimidation or, it's not accessible. Beauty really is this, very, as I, well, we're recession-proof in terms of where we are from an economy standpoint, because it's accessible to everybody and everybody can take advantage of it. And that's what drew me in. And just, you know, the idea that you, you know, truly can transform yourself in terms of how you feel and look. And, you know, the brand L'Oréal Paris sort of was instrumental in the tagline, because you're worth it. And the value and meaning of worth was so transformative for me. And it's why I spent so many years on that beloved brand. And it really hooked, you know, it hooked into me. And I really loved the powerful message that it expressed.
I remember very specifically once I asked you to tell me a little bit about doing international communications for a brand like L'Oréal and how it was different in different parts of the world. And I remember that like it was yesterday, how you, well, I'll let you tell people a little bit about that if you don't mind, because I thought that was so interesting as women see themselves differently or what they want to accentuate in terms of their beauty is different depending on where you are in the world.
It totally is. And, you know, but, you know, what was so great about L'Oréal is the sense of worth. No matter where you were in the world, you know, women wanted to have a sense of worth and value. And, you know, when you think about, for instance, the China market, right, and their obsession with SPF and their obsession with, you know, youthfulness and beauty, it's quite dynamic versus, you know, other parts of like the LATAM community that is about, you know, incredibly bold and vibrant looks, hair is, I mean, you know, like the hair market is just.
Didn't you say there's something like 13 steps in Brazil when you do your
hair? Yes. Yeah. And it's one of the fastest growing markets in terms of, you know, new entrants into the beauty category, which is, as you can, it's explosive in terms of all of the sort of new indie brands that are really coming in a big way. Many of them are out of Brazil.
What other trends are you seeing that are interesting to you? Because we're going to get to your career transition in a second, but I am curious in terms of just looking maybe even across the world or across the types of products that are coming out. What are the trends that you see maybe also coming out of the pandemic? Has it changed?
Yeah. Well, I'll talk maybe beauty. And then I think if do kind of a double click on kind of the modern day workforce, right, in terms of how that's evolving. Mm-hmm. But from a beauty standpoint, I mean, skincare just continues to be on fire. And that was a complete result of the pandemic, right? You had your face was very much masked. So the idea of, you know, the lip category suffered, you know, quite substantially. And so skincare, which had always been building and growing from a market and a share value, really started to become quite explosive. And so skincare continues to be one of the hottest categories within the beauty market. The other thing you're seeing is real innovation in terms of packaging. You know, the pandemic also, you know, there's this sort of saying that people are toying, which is hygiene is the new sustainability, meaning, you know, how the product is actually packaged and the delivery system in which it's intended is quite innovative. And so you're really starting to see that again in skincare predominantly. So I think skincare is certainly, you know, here to stay. I think you're seeing a lot of, you know, new indie brands, and that's a real result of TikTok. I mean, it's fundamentally single-handedly driving the category in terms of performance and conversion from a marketing and sales standpoint. So, you know, it's a rich environment to talk about beauty, to talk about before and after, to talk about sensoriality. And so, you know, that was a real sort of, you know, I would say market lead or innovation from the pandemic.
It is interesting that a lot of, you know, the people who are listening to this are probably not teenagers, right? They're people like maybe in a career transition, or they're wanting to move up, or maybe they're just big fans of The Five or America's Newsroom, which would be great. I'm curious about the impact of social media from two perspectives. One is the business side of things, as you were just describing, and just how somebody who could all of a sudden become a influencer and make millions of dollars. And then some people think, well, that's the career that I want. How possible is it to just become an internet influencer or a beauty influencer?
Well, it's incredibly hard. I mean, one of my dear friends is the CEO of the Big Brothers Big Sisters in actually the whole state of New Jersey. And, you know, one of the things he was saying, unfortunately, was that, you know, 15 years ago, you know, sort of, you know, underserved communities and children thinking you know, how do they get a kind of a step up? It used to be that they thought that their, you know, point of access was going to be an athlete or, you know, some sort of a celebrity athlete or star of some kind. Now the answer is, oh, I'll just be an influencer. And it's incredibly misleading and it's incredibly difficult. I mean, to be a true influencer with, you know, real gravitas in terms of your, you know, revenue and to operate as a true independent entity is very, very hard. The only way you can really win is if you're first and fast. So for those that enter TikTok, you know, I would say 2 years ago, their likelihood of being a TikTok phenomenon is much better than those that are just entering, you know, the medium today. So I would always look at dissuading young people from thinking that that's a career path. I would make it your side hustle. So if it's, you know, pursue a career that is more stable and then look at if you want to grow your TikTok or your social media presence, do so, as I said, as a side hustle. And the big thing that we're seeing from a trend standpoint, and this is sort of the Web 3.0, and it's all about democratizing one's profession and sort of giving that access to others. So you're seeing real breakout stars that are CPAs that are just teaching people financial literacy and, you know, the value of what a tax return is or how you should think about savings or investing. So, you know, that's, you know, I think taking your profession and then utilizing a platform like TikTok to bring it to the masses is that's where I would go in terms of from an opportunity standpoint.
How do you protect a brand from like a negative influencer, or is that impossible?
There's always trolls, right? So, you know, with any brand, you'll have, you know, a fair amount of naysayers and that comes, but there's not, I mean, you just sort of, to engage them is to only give it more oxygen and to only make that issue or that comment that much more visible within the feed. So there's always a, you know, it's my stance to not give it the spotlight that it justifiably does not deserve.
What about social media's impact on younger girls, teens, college age people, or even like basically anybody who's sitting there having to look at themselves on Zoom all day long, and the effects of that? Were there things that ever happened in the industry that you thought were positive to try to help even parents deal with all the social media pressure that comes from, well, I guess social media.
Well, I think, you know, I'll answer it, you know, two ways. One, I will say as a professional, I think, you know, Facebook is so wrong and how they so unbelievably did not do enough research and analytics in terms of how that platform so negatively affects young girls in terms of eating disorders and then, you know, feeding them diet pills. I mean, that absolutely still is happening. And I think that's one of the great, catastrophes in terms of Facebook. So I think that it needs to have a reckoning and it has to, you know, immediately. I think in terms of, you know, as a parent, how you manage it, it's about, you know, putting guardrails on, you know, how much time they spend on the platform. You know, for TikTok, as a mother of an 11-year-old girl, that's how she interacts with her friends. So, you know, it's just so you can't, I don't think removing it is the answer, but I do think giving, you know, kind of putting those guardrails or those timeframes in place is important, and not letting it just be sort of, you know, vapid, you know, watching, if you will.
We'll be back with more of this interview after this.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
How has work from home affected your work or work in the industry?
Well, I think it's, you know, I think it's here to stay. I mean, I think in many ways it has not only, I would say one of the things that gets a lot of, you know, oxygen in terms of news is, you know, work from home or in the office. But I would argue that there's a sense of even, you know, kind of carving out your own hours. And I'm seeing that a lot with my team members. You know, you can see where pockets of productivity work for them. And so this sort of antiquated 9 to 5 is over. And it's funny, if you really research the 9 to 5, it was to accommodate factories. It really just is not the modern kind of, you know, work hours. So I would say that you're seeing, you know, not only a fluidity in terms of, you know, where and how you work, but when you work. But with that said, I would also say, you know, you can't underestimate the value of being in person. And I do not believe you can build culture purely virtually. You know, you have to think about as a company who's managing kind of a post-pandemic workforce, you know, how do you deliver purposeful meetings? How do you get people in the office to, especially a young person? I feel for young people that are recent graduates that are trying to assimilate into an organization that don't, you know, every organization has sort of some, you know, political juggernaut or, you know, sort of sense about them. And you cannot pick up on that virtually. So I think it's important to be in the office. I just think sort of the 5-day work week is dead as we know it.
It's really interesting. If there's anybody listening who maybe wants to break into the industry, is there anything that you suggest that they try to do?
In terms of industry, like
in the beauty industry? I mean, that's obviously such a diverse industry. And as you were mentioning, there's a lot of new independent brands. So you don't just have to work for some of the big companies like a Maybelline or something. I don't even know who owns Maybelline. There's like, it's confusing.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, the great resignation and sort of the great dispersion is making, you know, beauty companies are hiring because of how fast growth they are, because they're somewhat recession proof. So I think, you know, LinkedIn, I still think is probably of all the social media sites, one of the most underutilized in terms of its effectiveness and ability to really, you know, draw great talent and qualified talent into job opportunities and directly to the people that hire. So I would say, you know, to utilize LinkedIn and certainly utilize your network, especially if you're in like a New York or an LA, which is in the United States, where the majority of the beauty companies and their are in fact headquartered. So, you know, I would definitely probably, you know, I still think, you know, thinking about both coasts in terms of if you want to work in the industry, you have to be open to want to live in one of those coasts. For
that's
sure.
Super interesting, because as you mentioned at the top, you and I both grew up in the Midwest. Do you think that the beauty industry does enough to not just focus on the coasts of the country, or does that not matter because everyone aspires to be glamorous?
I think they appeal to the base and, you know, to trend. I mean, at the end of the day, beauty is a trend driven industry. So, and notoriously, the cutting edge of trend has been on either coast. And so arguably, when that trend is in fact established and adopted, it does tend to kind of trickle into the rest of the country. So I would say that I think that's what consumers want, you know, but it doesn't mean there's not great innovation and great design in other parts of the world. But I would say, you know, as New York is the financial capital of the world, New York is also the beauty capital of the world. So I would liken it similarly to those.
Let's take a different turn here. Would you mind telling everybody how we met?
So we met at the Glamour Magazine Top 10 College Women Dinner. And you want me to tell the story about?
Yes, please.
I had recently been on mat leave, and I have been a
That's
fan
maternity
of the,
leave?
Maternity
wow,
leave.
Wow, I didn't know that maternity slang.
Yeah.
mat leave. It makes it sound so cool.
And so I would be home, and I was there with my oldest, and I would, religiously watch The Five. And, you know, as one does, you create a connection as if we're already friends, because I'm just watching you every single day. So I'm back at work, and we at the time at L'Oreal, and we were a big sponsor of the Glamour Top 10 College Women. And there was a stakeholder dinner with many of the honorees, in which Glamour recognized and honored, with celebrities, talent, personalities, politicos, et cetera. And I saw you from across the room, which was my, celebrity crush and still is. And I was going to the White House Correspondents' Dinner and in 2 weeks. And I had convinced myself through a little bit of liquid courage that that's my opening line with you. You were a correspondent. You were the press secretary, that you'll have great advice on what I should wear. And so I mustered the courage to walk across the table and just introduce myself with the opening line that I was attending the White House Correspondents' Dinner, of which you said, oh, you mean the nerd prom. So you were immediately disarming. And we just, and I just shared what a fan I was of yours and you what the work you were doing for women. I had read your book over maternity leave as well, your first one, and The Good News Is. So, I just felt this kindredship, and you reciprocated with such kindness and generosity, and helped me.
Well, you're the most charming person I think I know. I really do think you're one of the most charming people I know, truly. And I'm thrilled to become good friends with you. I think that it's interesting when you said, you plucked up the courage to come up to me. It's funny, because even I need to pluck up courage to go up to people. And one of the things I say is that, especially now in post-pandemic, work from home can be good. It's great for a lot of people. It's great. But if you want to grow your network and have people that you can rely on and call upon like this, you and I have been friends for several years now, you have to get out there. You have to go and meet some people. You have to force yourself to go to at least one networking event a month. I don't think that's a lot to ask. I truly don't.
No, I completely agree. And, there would be two things that I always that I think make up me to some extent. And one is, and I think this can be adopted by anybody, is be the person that you've never met a stranger. Right. Just you've never met a stranger, and be constantly curious, and be a fan of anybody, because that truly, I think, that genuine curiosity and just, an infection to understand and get to know them and to compliment them in terms of their position within an organization or what their impact of their work has meant to you. People tend to light up and are excited to talk about that. Mm-hmm. So if you're always a fan and you kind of think about yourself as never, meeting a stranger, I think you'll be well poised to have that gumption to take that first step.
Is there any advice that you were given early on that you find yourself repeating to others now?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I would say there's several. I think, one thing is, and this is a quote, and I love it. Today is the tomorrow you worried about yesterday. And I think you get the point of that.
I do. Oh my gosh. I live that for many years.
Everything's gonna be okay. Just relax. Like the story you tell yourself sometimes is so much worse or so off in terms of what the situation is, and you've just wasted, all that time. I would say also, I often tell people, to not fear change. It's the only thing that's ever constant. And you can't control what happens to you, but you can control how you react to it. And that's always been, I say this as if I'm some expert at it, which I'm not. But if you just give yourself sort of the grace to realize, you don't have to show up for it, at a 10. And I think finally, I think one of the one that I think is most profound for young people, especially as they navigate their careers, is you don't work for companies, you work for people. And I say that because, you know, in my throughout my career, I have made the conscious decision of working for some really dynamic individuals that maybe didn't have the sexiest role, or it wasn't the sexiest account or client, but that person was dynamic and I ended up learning so much from them. So, you know, sometimes like the super exciting role that has a kind of a not great manager, you know, you're not going to get nearly as much as if you work for somebody who really inspires you. So keep that in mind, you know, and I think you can choose your managers now and choose how you want to, the people you spend, you know, so much time with.
How do you think about mentors? I know one of your mentors, and I think she's amazing, Karen.
Yes.
But were there other people that you look to and think, wow, that really made a difference in my life? Because I often think that you don't have to actually have a formal relationship with somebody to be your mentor. You can admire somebody and learn from them from afar, or you might, as you just mentioned, it might be somebody who you didn't anticipate to be a mentor because perhaps, you know, they work in accounting and you're in production, but they end up being a mentor nonetheless.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many that come to mind, yourself included, you know, by the way. And you know what they all have is an unbelievably strong work ethic. They do the work. And I think sometimes, you know, you see that there's this expectation or this, people think like it's, oh, it must have been easier how they've gotten there. Like everybody I know that is in a position of real success or, you know, leadership, you know, they worked their tails off. And I think that I'm reminded of that. Like you got to put in the work. It did not happen overnight for any of them. And they've always been in a very growth mindset. They've always made decisions, not in terms of making the decision for tomorrow, but making the decision for the future. And, you know, they were calculated in a good way. Way, and they often just said yes. You know, I, a lot of great mentors I know took, you know, what would have been perceived as a lateral move within an organization because it was going to, you know, propel them into something else. And Sheryl Sandberg, you know, talked so much about that and lean in. And it's very, very, very true. I would also say, you know, when I think about some mentors and again, advice for young people, I think one of the most effective skills that corporations are going to require that is going to lead to a great trajectory in terms of success is your ability to drive consensus and to get people who do not work for you to do work for you, because organizations are so flat. So the idea of integration and being able to mobilize and inspire and drive an idea on a team's forward that does not report directly into you is really the future sort of state of business. And those are very difficult, sometimes nuanced skills to have. So I think really thinking about that as a non-lateral, opportunity, I think is going to be, you know, super, super important. And I think all great leaders, you know, do that. And all great leaders, you know, are not necessarily obsessed with their own power, but rather, you know, inspiring those, you know, underneath them to achieve great things and to remove any kind of, barriers that are in their way.
More to come right after this.
Sephora stores are everywhere you are, so just pop in when you need a brown lip to match your 90s playlist, a confidence boost before your interview, or a last-minute gift for mom's birthday. There's always a Sephora near you. Just pop in. Use our store locator to find your local Sephora or Sephora at Kohl's.
Are you able to talk about that decision that was a tough one to leave an established, huge, amazing, globally recognized brand like L'Oreal and then to go on and become an independent business owner and a very successful one at that?
Yeah, well, you know, and you know my story, which I'll quickly kind of surmise in that, you know, I had loved L'Oreal. I still love L'Oreal. I'm the biggest fan of the entire organization. It's a remarkable, remarkable place to work. And, you know, I was recruited from a private equity company who was, you know, building a portfolio of businesses in fashion resale, entertainment, and ultimately beauty. And And it was a kind of a, you know, if I was ever going to sort of leap, you know, that was the time to do it, because I really knew where I was going within L'Oreal, which was exciting. But also, like, did I really want to know exactly where I was going to, you know, kind of end up over the next 10 years? And so I decided to kind of take this leap, if you will, because, and a lot of great mentors, you know, gave me advice to do so. What do you have to lose, sort of thing. So I did it and was and successfully worked in this, you know, an incredibly, you know, kind of startup dynamic environment, until the founder and sole investor was diagnosed with a rare form of cancer and sadly passed away. And sort of the fund and sort of the businesses that were being incubated were dissolved. And so I found myself in this, you know, complete, like, an utter, you know, sort of, you know, tailspin of what am I going to do? And it was a woman that I had hired as my head of business development, who is my counterpart at Nielsen Swader, Kate Swader, who had such a skill set in terms of driving entrepreneurs and startups, that really hooked in nicely to my experience of driving, you know, big global growth businesses. So we decided to start Nielsen Swader as a brand accelerator and an integrated marketing comms agency that would service, you know, beauty, consumer products, biotech, healthcare, wellness, et cetera. So it was, you know, it was incredibly scary. And I remember when, you know, I was sort of crying to Kate, like, I don't know if I can do this. I as a child, I suffered from, you know, I grew up in a house that kind of had some financial insecurity. And here I was, I'd left a major, you know, company. I had left a lot of money on the table, and I was going to, you know, be an entrepreneur, which was such a, you know, I don't know what, you know, how much we're going to make the first year, or if I can, you know, pay the mortgage. Like, it was incredibly daunting. And, you know, we ended up being, and are luckily, and by, you know, the grace of God, are so successful and are really, really taking off. But one of the things she said was, you know, one of the riskiest things anybody can do for themselves is have one source of income. And when you think about, as a W-2 employee, which I still advocate for the Great American Corporation, mind you, it's the greatest, you know, institutor of wealth in this country. But, you know, when that goes, your salary goes. And as an entrepreneur with, you know, many, many clients can come and go, but, you know, you're still kind of, you know, you're diversified, your revenue's diversified. And so that kind of alleviated sort of some of those fears that I had in terms of starting Nielsen Swader and kind of taking a second leap, you know, outside of private equity into, you know, being a business owner. And if it wasn't for her and her leadership and sort of, you know, mentorship as my partner, I don't know if I could have done it. And I remember calling you too, telling you, what should I do? And you're like, I think you should do it. I was like, are you sure? And you're like, yes. So I was like, okay.
I think the other thing is too, that we haven't mentioned Simon, your amazing husband, and having a life partner who you can rely on and allow that. Well, one, it can help you feel more comfortable taking a risk.
Yeah.
But you can also then feel like, oh gosh, I'm, you know, especially if you're the, in our situation. For me and Peter, it was like, well, but can I take a risk? Because what if I'm making more money? And that, I think a lot of families and couples are going through that in the last several years. Although I feel like the stigma of women making more than men is going away. I'm not suggesting that's your situation at all, but I do think on that financial insecurity and the financial anxiety is something that we as mentors can help others. Now, partly because we've gone through it. I used to be I used to pay my student loan and my car loan 3 months in advance because I was afraid I wouldn't have the money 3 months from now in order to pay. It was nonsense. Yeah. It was nonsense, but I did it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those things, you know, you play, you know, as somebody was sharing with me, you play this tape forward, right? And do you really think, Maura, as the head of, you know, the integrated marketing team for L'Oreal Paris with a 20-year career, that you're just never going to get a job again?
Right, I know.
No, you know, but at the time, that's the story I told myself. Oh my God, I'm just never going to work again.
Right.
And it's, preposterous, you know, and I realized in that scenario, because we made some decisions, because I didn't bet on myself. I did not bet on myself. And I think you have to believe and bet on yourself and realize, you know, so many people have great, as you said, you know, if you're born in America, you're already, you know, yeah. you won the lottery. You've got family and friends. People aren't going to let you, you know, go begging in the streets. It's just, but yet that's how many people make decisions. And, in terms of not taking risk. And I think that, you know, they've got to let that go.
We'll wrap it up soon. I do want to ask about your ability to be such a gracious, amazing person with these three beautiful children that you're raising and a dog. You used to also have chickens, but then now no more chickens. How do you do it all?
Well, I think balance is a myth. It's all about trade-offs. That's it. And you make your decision. You know, I have an amazing husband. I try not to, you know, beat myself up. I think, you know, comparing yourself to others is the biggest way to be unhappy. So I try very, very hard not to do that. But you surround yourself with really great people that support you, you know, and you choose to spend your time on what matters. And that changes, by the way, every day and sometimes every hour. So, you know, where I, you know, one of my most important meetings, you know, could be a big presentation until I get a phone call from school that, you know, somebody's tested positive for COVID, as a for instance, right? Like, no, that meeting's just, it's just not as important. So it was a trade-off. So I think that's kind of, you know, kind of how everybody does it. And then that's whether you're a mother or a parent or anybody, and just having kind of the resilience to give yourself some grace and to stop beating yourself up and comparing yourself to ridiculous standards that are totally manufactured and not real.
I don't know if you're able to, but don't you and your daughters have some sort of new nighttime tradition that is hilarious and funny and yeah. fabulous?
So at night now, I'll to kind of like wrap up the day, and, you know, because I sometimes feel like I don't spend as much time as I should. We do tea time. So and my husband, like, my husband will make the little tea, and then me, Mary, and Kate will sit upstairs in our bed, and that's when we talk. Like, they think they're Princess Kate from London, and we'll sit and we'll chat, and, you know, we'll talk about their day, and it's like 30 minutes, and it's everything. So that's been, and I don't do it every night, but I try to do it, you know, two, three nights a week, and it has meant so much to them.
They will remember that forever.
I think so.
I think it's a great idea, and I would love to have tea time with you guys sometime soon.
Always.
All right. Maura, thank you for your time, and congratulations on all your success.
Thank you so much.
Make sure you subscribe to this series wherever you download podcasts and leave a rating and review. I'm Dana Perino. Everything will be okay.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com.
Listen to Fox News Podcast shows ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or follow wherever you get your podcasts.